Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Jim, it's a race that we've probably talked about more than any other, certainly in the general election season, and that's the Colorado Senate race. Mark Udall won fairly easily back in 2008, but it was a very Democratic year. The Republicans got Cory Gardner as their candidate fairly late in the primary season, but the rest of the field cleared out for him. It got closer and closer, and now, as you point out in the campaign spot, 8 of the last 9 polls show Gardner ahead, and the last 2 show him outside the margin of error, 1 by 6, 47-41, and another with him at that magic 50% mark, 50-46, and it just looks like all the momentum right now is with Cory Gardner.
You don't necessarily want to say, oh, lock it up, it's done, it's over. But when one candidate does, you know, get a lead and a pretty, you know, it's sometimes inside the margin of error, sometimes out, it starts to look better and better for Cory Gardner. And the tone of the Udall campaign certainly seems to be getting more and more desperate. A couple things jump out is that, you know, last night they asked Senator Udall what he thinks the most biggest non-issue that Congress keeps debating. And he said Benghazi. I kind of marvel that that's the one he would pick. I suppose that's an issue that will, you know, that's an answer that will really please the Democratic base. It will enrage the Republican base. I thought Cory Gardner's answer that, like, look, the families of those who died deserve all the answers, you know, kind of makes Udall look like a jerk. A lot of people like Cory Gardner's ad he released this week called Fix It, talking about being bipartisan, no matter how Udall said he would be bipartisan, turned out to not be, whereas Gardner says, look, when my party is wrong, I'll say it. When something is wrong, I'll fix it. And then finally today, no campaigning for Gardner because he's, you know, within an hour or two, one of his House subcommittee is going to hold a hearing on Ebola and how the government's responding to that. And so that's a nice little contrast in the section. You know, look, there's a crisis going on here, but he's still doing his day job because it's important. He has to, you know, he has to fulfill that. And by the way, just observe, like, this would have, if it had gone the other way, I think Udall would have easily pounced on Gardner skipping a hearing on Ebola in order to campaign and stuff like that. So just seems like Cory Gardner's doing everything right, and while it's not quite locked up, it might be kind of setting a, you know, establishing a role model for other Republican campaigns in states that are kind of purple and not necessarily easy states for Republicans to win.
The race also got a jolt last week when the Denver Post, not known for endorsing Republicans, kind of enthusiastically endorsing Cory Gardner and really harsh on Mark Udall. So we'll see if that played any role into this. On to the bad martini now, Jim, and we head over to the Florida governor's race. I think there's a lot of people in Florida who aren't super thrilled with their choices this year. The economy's actually gotten quite a bit better lately under Rick Scott, but he had a very rough beginning to his administration. Charlie Crist, the former Republican governor, turned independent, turned Democrat, turned changing all of his opinions on all the major issues, is neck and neck with Scott, and most polls hold a slight lead, usually within the margin of error. Last night, they were scheduled to hold a debate, and the debate eventually happened, but it was delayed, leaving anchor Elliot Rodriguez to explain the awkward situation as to why it took several minutes to get this thing underway.
We have been told that Governor Scott will not be participating in the debate. Now, let me explain what this is all about. Governor Crist has asked to have a fan, a small fan, placed underneath his podium. The rules of the debate that I was shown by the Scott campaign say that there should be no fan. Somehow there is a fan there, and for that reason, ladies and gentlemen, I am being told that Governor Scott will not join us for this debate.
Jim, Charlie Crist bending the rules, but regardless of what you think about that, most people are going to see that as pretty petty on the part of Scott, and that's what we're talking about today instead of whatever happened in the debate.
Look, first of all, let's keep Rick Scott, for a good portion of the year, was enjoying a, you know, a small but consistent lead in this poll. It remains to be seen how much this will shake things up, but it's really kind of hard to see people feeling warm and fuzzy and better about Rick Scott on this, because it appears to be a case of Charlie Crist agreeing to something and then changing the rules at the end, right before, you know, they go on air. And if so, that's something worth objecting to. I can understand the complaint. And we all remember, you know, why is the fan important? Because you don't want to be sweating. We all remember the anecdotes about Richard Nixon and John F. Kennedy and you know, that old saying, you never want people to see you sweat. Whether you really get anywhere by saying, well, I'm not going to debate then. I just, by the way, that's not really an impression of Rick Scott. He's not a British supervillain. That even though he looks like Lex Luthor. If you want to, maybe you go out and you say, by the way, you know, before we get started, we had rules in place, and you know, Governor Crist is violating those rules. I'm not going to not debate over it, but I think it's symbolic or something. You know, there are ways you can play that and spin that to your advantage. To just say I'm not going to participate and then hold the thing up for 7 minutes, it just looks petty. It just looks silly. It looks scared. It looks like you're looking for an excuse to not debate, and it just I can't understand the thinking going through his team right there. Go out and you do it, and I guess the fear is, well, I'll sweat and he won't. You know, you do more damage, I think, by not debating, and it just seems like a really bizarre, unforced error on the part of Rick Scott and his campaign.
Yes, absolutely. At a time when he can least afford it, with less than 3 weeks to go and on the south end of most of the recent polling. All right, on to the crazy martini now, and this is a double-fisted crazy martini, to say the least. Yesterday, we found out that there was a second nurse from the Dallas hospital that was treating the now-deceased Ebola patient who has contracted the disease. That was bad enough. Then we found out that she flew on a commercial flight just a day before checking herself in for the symptoms that she was feeling, including a fever. The CDC says absolutely she should not have flown. That was a bad decision on her part. Oh, but we find out later in the day she did check in with the CDC, reported she had a fever, but because it didn't reach the official Ebola threat level of a fever in terms of temperature, they said, go ahead and fly anyway. So that obviously got a lot of people alarmed. The stock market tanked. And then we got this lecture from Shepard Smith over at Fox News. This is a little bit extended, but it definitely ranks high in the sanctimony meter. Here we go.
You should have no concerns about Ebola at all. None, I promise. Unless a medical professional has contacted you personally and told you of some sort of possible exposure, fear not. Do not listen to the hysterical voices on the radio and the television or read the fear-provoking words online. The people who say and write hysterical things are being very irresponsible. Suggestions have been made publicly that leaders and medical professionals may be lying to us. Those suggestions are completely without basis in fact. There is no evidence of any kind of which we at Fox News are aware that leaders have lied about anything regarding Ebola. The panic that has tanked the stock market and left people fearful that their children will get sick at school is counterproductive and lacks basis in fact or reason. We don't have widespread panic in America. We should not have it. We don't have an outbreak. We have two sick people from one dying man. And the rest of this should stop because it's not productive and it's not worth ratings and it's not worth politics, and we all need to stop it.
I don't know if we were lied to, but they've been wrong pretty much about everything they've said. And thanks to Shepard Smith for just telling us we all need to calm down and go away. And apparently it's all our fault.
I do not really like this tone from Shep Smith. A couple things in his statements there. You know, when he says, you know, unless you're a healthcare worker, you have no reason to fear. Whoa, 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 whoa. We have the one person who we've identified, Mr. Duncan, that we know of. And the fact that Duncan got here indicates that our current, well, have you been to West Africa, screening is not sufficient. Oh, by the way, we just started asking people that yesterday. A little bit before that segment, Greg, he had kind of criticized one of his correspondents who had said Americans are panicking. And I think that's an important point. We're not seeing panic out there. I haven't seen riots in the streets, chaos, people looting, any of that kind of signs we usually see in our zombie apocalypse movies. But what's more, there's probably like one woman who's at the airport who's in her full hazmat material suit. Most people, I don't think, are panicked. I think they're concerned. And I think they may be feeling fear. But I'm not so sure it's driven by media coverage and the idea that it's overhyped, because this is a big story. When people say, oh, well, more people will die of the flu. Yes, and we, you know, most people feel like they have figured out how to live their life in a way that mitigates the fear of the flu. They go and get their flu shot, or, you know, hopefully people do it. And if they don't feel well, they go to the doctor and everything's fine. Ebola is something very new to us. It's very alien to us. And we know that particularly this strain is you know, can be very deadly. So I don't think this is a mindless, overhyped, panic reaction on the part of the American people. When he says no one in the government has lied, well, no one's lied, but if they seek out information that is not accurate, to quote the wise philosopher Hillary Clinton, at this point, what difference does it make? You know, if they're telling you something that is not accurate, then it's kind of, you know, that we have good reason to be unnerved. And as you said, you know, letting that woman get on not one, but two flights. She made a round trip to Cleveland. That's concerning. The fact that that plane was used several times is concerning as well. Now, as we understand it, the virus is not airborne. Although I would point out, someone sneezes. It's not that the virus is in the air. It's that it's in the little droplets of mucus and stuff that come out of your nose and mouth when you sneeze. So first lesson, cover your mouth when you sneeze. But secondly, you know, if someone with Ebola sneezes on you, will you definitely get it? No, in fact, you know, but there's at least a possibility. The CDC director was trying to make this point, and I think it's I think he's not making it clear enough because people are saying, well, wait a second, you're telling people don't worry about taking public transportation. It's still safe to get on the bus. But if you're one of these people we have monitoring, we don't want you to get on the bus. And people were like, wait a minute, that doesn't, what it means is that you, Greg Corumbus, or you, Three Martini Lunch listener, if you get on the bus, the odds of the person next to you having Ebola and sneezing on you are probably like 1,000,000 to 1. So you know, you should not say, well, I'm not taking the bus anymore, out of fear of that. But if you do have Ebola, you do need to take certain, or if you're at risk for Ebola, if you're one of those people who was being treated, that gentleman down in Dallas, you just need to take steps to, you know, just kind of common sense and kind of limit your exposure to other people. Unfortunately, we have, you know, the woman for the NBC News medical correspondent going out for soup and have this second nurse taking those two flights. So, you know, I think there is reason for concern. And I don't really like Shep Smith talking down to his audience. And as I was saying, we discussed this a bit on Greta last night. People say, oh, you don't want to start a panic. I don't think anything spreads panic more than the sense that they're not getting the full story from people in authority. Lay it all out there, and hopefully things will, you know, work out okay. It just is this unnerving kind of, you know, lecturing is really kind of irritating to hear from the likes of Shep Smith.
Jim, speaking of flights, you'll be taking one soon, so good luck in that.
Relax, Greg. It's just Malaysian Airlines.
And we'll talk to you on Wednesday.
I hope so.
Jim, see ya. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. There will still be three martini lunches, though. Join Andrew Johnson and me on Friday for the next three martini lunch.